Welcome to Tweet Me Harder. This is the world's first, best, only, and last talkback-enabled interactive audio pod blast.
Hey, I'm Chris Straub.
Hi, I'm David Malky. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This is Tweet Me Harder, episode number 2. Hopefully you understand the concept of the show. You can tweet us at any time and use the hashtag TMH2. That will send us your tweets and send everyone else who's listening your tweets as well.
I like it.
So far, so good, right? We're off to a good start.
Yeah. So last week, at the end of the show, you offered everybody a topic.
I did.
To tweet about.
We asked everyone to send us their stories about unanticipated victory. And the thing is, victory, as we know, in general, is pretty sweet. I think you'll probably agree.
It's okay.
It's better than the alternative. I mean, not always, I suppose, but in terms of just tooling around in your life, not being victorious or having victory, I think probably the latter is typically preferable.
Well, the thing is that I think you really had to qualify with unexpected or unanticipated victory because the word victory is so strong.
Sure.
And especially when you use it in the form victorious, suddenly I'm like, oh, God, what aspects of my life am I victorious in? There's no way.
Well, and victory is defined in a way as being a challenge over adversity. This is something where you win. So the unexpected or the unanticipated nature of this particular type of victory, I think, is especially sweet because you were expecting to lose, or at the very least, you were not expecting to have anything special happen, right?
No, that's true. I guess you're right. I guess I'm imagining a real struggle, but it might just be like, hey, all right.
Well, unanticipated victory is arguably the best type of victory because it represents such a swing from the expected outcome, which is by definition not victory, to victory. So I'd like to play a call that we received. We have our comment line, which is area code 206-337-8560. You can call anytime, and we can play your messages. We're not going to play them for this show, obviously, but if you called right now, we'd have it in time for the next show. But we had some people call in and give us their stories of unanticipated victory, like this one.
One time, I put a quarter in the gumball machine, and 2 gumballs came out of it.
That's solid.
I think that is unanticipated victory in its purest form.
Yeah, that's like you've given like the prototype, like the perfect way to sum it up.
Right, you can put in whatever terms you want into those blanks. I put a blank into the blank machine, and 2 blanks came out, and it works every time.
Yeah,
doesn't matter if it's gumballs, doesn't matter if it's brats.
What if it's dead guys?
Well, here's what I want to know though. Let's think about this. This is victory, clearly, for the person who got more for their money, right?
Oh, yeah.
But someone has to fill that gumball machine.
Oh, yeah.
Someone had to buy those gumballs.
But the thing is, though, that we're talking about an exchange rate here. That gumball did not cost 25 cents. That gumball cost like a tenth of a cent. The guy who lost, I don't think he would call that a loss, you know? If we do another show with an unexpected failure, he's not going to be like, I lost a gumball. I think I poured exactly 364. And I'm sitting here like a chump.
You're absolutely right. But here's the thing. You don't get to make that decision. You don't get to say, oh, it doesn't hurt anyone. It's a victimless crime. Because this is how people justify theft. They go, oh, I'm not hurting anybody. The guy owns a business. He's not going to miss it.
This victory could have a bad consequence.
Well, I'm saying there's another side to it. I'm saying that, you know, for every extra gumball that somebody gets, it is another gumball that some other guy didn't sell because he's not making his money just on the sale of, like, his expense is not just gumballs. It's gas to fill up the gumball machine.
You gotta compute the weight of that gumball that goes into that. I understand. How much more gas did he spend because he's got that, you know, quarter ounce of a an additional ball.
Or more to the point, does he have to come back more frequently or more often or sooner now to spend more time to refill the machine because it's emptier than it would have been? You're assuming that this is a fluke event. What if the gumball machine is broken? What if it's given out two gumballs every time? Then his profits are literally halved.
Let me ask you a scary question.
All right.
Have you ever seen anybody fill a gumball machine?
It's funny that you say that. My brother actually owned a vending machine route for a number of years.
Wow.
And there were not gumball machines in particular because those are such so kind of low profit. But his job was driving around in a truck filling up soda machines and candy machines. And I went with him often. I was, you know, kind of young and, hey, helping out the brother. And we'd go to the Walmart and we'd go to the, you know, the AutoZone or whatever it was. And he'd have snack machines in there. And so we'd open them up and fill them up.
Yeah, yeah. Did you get in the zone?
man, we were in the AutoZone.
AutoZone.
You know what the funniest part is? He tells me, and he eventually sold it, the route after a while. And it's sort of one of these things that people who are entrepreneurs are like, yeah, easy money. Buy a vending machine route, and then like 8 years later, they are trying to sell it to somebody by claiming, oh yeah, easy money. It's really easy. Go ahead, take this off my hands. Because it's not like, you know, it is what it is.
It's not fun.
But the work is, speaking of unanticipated, the work that goes into it involves maintenance on the machines. It involves actively soliciting new accounts to place in the machines. And then there's a lot of driving around.
How do you pitch that?
You have to find the person who is in charge of making those decisions at the company, which they often don't want to talk to you because they hear from solicitors all the time. If it's a corporate
Walmart, that you had 1.4 square foot of floor at the front of your store that was not being used.
Okay, I made a list of the things that could go there. Upright sleeping cubicle. I don't see one of those vendors around here, right?
Right. And they're like, has this ever happened to you? This guy trying to put a bed there in his business? This ain't working.
Anyway, it was a kind of thing where, and my brother even told me the story. He used to be like, I don't know, pizza delivery guy or something. He delivered some pizza to a really big corporation, or maybe he was sweeping the floors. It was something really menial. And then at lunch, he sees 50 vending machines along the wall of this massive company. It was in some defense company, I believe, is where he worked. And he's like, the guy who takes the money out of those machines, he's the guy making $1 million.
Everybody's got a better idea than I do.
Cut to, you know, 10 years later, he's lost 30 pounds. He's gaunt from the stress of driving around all day long, trying to keep all these vending machines filled. And you know, it's the kind of thing where if someone loses their money in the machine, they have to leave a note like, lost $1. And every time he comes in, it's like, all right, well, who do I owe a dollar to this time?
Yeah, that sucks.
So,
I was going to go to the Twitter, say, well, yeah. TomRK1089 says,
that's the one I was going to read.
What? So is there any action without negative consequence? I don't know.
That is a pretty good question, because in the case of a gumball situation, it's pretty obvious. Someone gains a gumball, you know, extra, and then someone else loses a gumball without intending to. So there's definitely a dichotomy there.
Malky, I am sick to death of your moral relativism. That is a win-win. The loss of that gumball was not sufficient to strike down that man.
Wait, so this is a win-win. Are you saying that this guy is like, I'm so glad someone took this extra gumball out of my hands. I have an extra gumball.
Well,
I didn't know what to do.
Maybe it's a win blank, because I suspect that he didn't notice that it was gone. I mean, over time, I'm sure he would say, if this thing was consistently spitting out two gumballs for every quarter, I think he'd notice. He'd definitely notice. But if it was a once-in-a-while fluke.
But we don't know, A, we don't know the conditions of this situation. We don't know if he has noticed. And our caller doesn't mention whether that's the case or not. And then number two, are you saying that in order for an act to be morally negative, then it has to be observed? You're saying morality cannot exist in a vacuum?
Yeah, for the purpose of this show, I'll fight that fight. I'll take that side. I would, but you know what? You have a special insight because your brother did that. Now, the thing is, though, if he's filling those machines with Cokes, I think you notice that. That's like 75 cents. That's like a buck, right? somehow a gumball, you know, which I imagine is just poured out of a sack into that machine. There's no way, unless he has like a perfectly portioned bag that on the side of it, it says exactly 100 gumballs.
I'm not arguing that it's likely that he noticed. What I'm saying is, even if he doesn't notice, is it still a morally negative act? If you steal the thing from the store and you're sneaky enough, you know, the candy bar, you're sneaky enough that the shopkeeper doesn't see you, does that make it not wrong?
Well, I'm not talking about whether or not they notice. I do believe that you can do wrong and not have anybody see it. But I'm saying we're talking about the quantity of the wrong. Somebody got an extra gumball.
You were the one calling me out for moral relativism. The quantity of the
wrong. Yeah, but this is relativism as favors me. So, it's good. Would you deprive this guy his victory? You asked him for his victory.
You're right. Double time.
We need to cleanse the palate.
So good. It's got two accordion strings. Okay, next call.
When I first moved to Los Angeles, I was living in a really shitty bachelor apartment. And after about 7 months, I wanted to move out early. And so I eventually figured out I had to ask the landlord to break my lease. And they said there was no problem. And when I came back to pick up my security deposit, the check was $5,000 larger than it needed to be. Because apparently, although unknown to me, they were buying people out of their leases and they were just assuming I was taking them up on the deal. So they basically reimbursed me for the entire 7 months that I've been staying in the apartment.
Okay, this is what we call the gumball conundrum writ large.
This is where you want to go with that stuff. That's the Socratic method.
The gumball situation assumes that the person gets a gumball without, you know, he pays for one gumball, he gets two gumballs. In this case, the person wanted fairness. This is Posaduck, by the way, who sent us this this particular call. This person wants to just go out even. Is not trying to screw anybody. Just wants to end this on amicable terms and gets way more than they asked for, and it's the fault of the landlord. You know, it's the cashier who gives you too much change. It's that situation.
Right.
Now, in this case, Posaduck doesn't like this apartment, so he's not going to act in a way that favors the landlord to correct their error. Is it wrong for him to then keep that money?
You know what? There was something about my previous argument that now is hollow, because once you convert from sugary, you know, something that you're only going to enjoy for like 5 minutes, you know, and when you eat a gumball, you're not even going to like it for that long. Usually I'm really disappointed. But when you turn it into $5,000, I don't know if I can make the same claim anymore, because I think that's technically a heist.
So what you're saying is, also, hold on a second. I want you to explain this to me. We were talking about victories, and all of a sudden, systematically, we have shot down these people's victories as being immoral. No, you don't deserve that gumball or that $5,000, because that $5,000 that you're keeping is punitive.
This is tweet me harder. We got to take a hard look. We're going to focus in, see what the deal is.
I really want one of those like Law and Order, like dun dun.
Yeah, that's the next one we need. Like when we catch somebody.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, did you ever watch Fight Back with David Horowitz? It was like one of those consumer advocacy shows.
I love that show. That that was L.A. only, right?
Well, I don't know. I only saw it ever in California.
I think he was a local guy, David. Oh no, I think he had a syndicated show.
Well, he's definitely a syndicated like columnist author now, because I've seen his name all over the place. But he used to have this show called Fight Back, and he would.
Do you remember the theme song?
I remember it. Fight back.
Fight back. Don't let no one push you around. That was the theme. I haven't thought about it in literally like 15 years. And when you said that, I remembered it.
Yeah, I remember the really hard hits on the fight back. And what he would do is, he was a consumer advocate, so he would take advertisers' claims or corporations' claims and then try and find out the merits of them. So, for example, there'd be a commercial that would show a demonstration of a product, like the Samsonite commercial with the gorillas throwing around the suitcase. and they would enact it in controlled conditions, and they'd try and find out if that claim was true or not.
Right.
So that's what we're doing. We're taking your victories, and we're saying, no,
we're
hold on.
We're testing them out. This is not technically a victory. We have pressed it against the rigors of the definition of victory, and your tail was found wanting. I didn't like it.
Okay, so we've got on the Twitter, we now have a story of victory from Babel Glyph. And she says, I assume it's a she, my first roommate in college begged me to be her roomie. I said yes. 1 quarter in, she ditches me for a single, and I think the story continues. The rooming lottery for the next year comes around, and she's at the end of the list, and Babel Glyph is just above her. There's only one room available, and she gets the last one. So this is a just dessert situation.
Oh, yeah.
That's nice. This is similar to the gumball situation. This is of through no active, work on the part of Babel Glyph, but still the world has worked out in her favor.
Yeah.
She's not actively trying to screw anybody.
See, and I would say the difference... here is that it's almost like recompense. You know what I mean? You were wronged, and then you got some sweet justice from the universe. Nobody's exactly. losing a gumball. She got screwed over, and now she's getting to screw over the screwer.
Exactly. I think the key here that draws a moral line between this one and the gumball situation, nobody's lost a gumball. You really put the fine point on that one.
That's all I care about. That's only fair.
Well, yeah. I mean, you want the gumball, or you want all the people that get gumballs to have paid for their gumballs, and you want all the people who want gumballs to have gumballs, and you want all the people who bought gumballs to be reimbursed for their gumballs, and thus the gumball equilibrium is maintained.
The great gumball continuum is sustained. Yeah. No, that's good.
We have a hug party on Twitter says, I had a similar situation where I got 2 weeks worth of pay at over double my salary and my boss let me keep it all. This is a situation where we need more information.
Yeah. So
hug party,
go ahead.
Yeah. Fill in, take as many tweets as you need, but we need the rest of the story.
That almost seems like an act of kindness on the part of the boss.
It does depend on whether the boss, how beholden the boss is to the corporation. If this is some massive corporation, the boss is like, just take it. Or if this is the mom and pop operation and the boss is like, I will be destitute, but go ahead, I made a mistake, I deserve to pay for it.
The poor Indian guy. I mean,
is that Indian? Why are you being racist? No,
Sorry, Indian American. Sorry.
Yeah, oh, that's much better. So hug party, tell us the rest of the information. What's the circumstances? Why did you get, these are the questions I want you to answer. Why did you get paid more than you needed to? What was the boss's reaction like when you told him or him or her, or how did he or she find out, and why did they let you keep it? That's what we want to know.
The boss's reaction was, whoopee, because he remembers being that age and how good that would have felt.
Oh, go ahead. You know what? You deserve it. Your life is hard.
You have a good kid.
Oh, man. So the response to the sort of victory as morality, like the logical extension of that from Crazy C Studios on Twitter is, so can victory be moral? Now these victories we were describing, we were arguing for the immorality of them, but victory can certainly be moral in the example that we just heard about the rooms, right? This is just desserts.
Yeah, I guess, well, yeah, I mean... I guess it could be argued that it's not nice of you to go like, I got you back, you know, even though I think it's kind of a deal where that other person should be sleeping on a bus somewhere, because that's not fair. That's a lie. You should get caught. How deep do these go?
Well, because you could certainly say that person that got, you know, that left our Babel Glyph high and dry the first time around and then got shafted the second time around, you could make an argument there that, you know, like you could hear her side to the story. Oh, I was really having a hard time, and there were some things with my family, and I just wasn't able to stay in this apartment because for reasons out of my control, and I don't really deserve to be punished. Like, I don't know the situation. Are we willing to give her the benefit of the doubt, or
what if the other person who got shafted the second go round was like, she's got her own victory. She says, this is awesome. I was hoping not to get that room because it had been tested and it was full of that black moss and radon. I didn't want to live there.
Okay, so what happens is we have a Twitter, like we don't really, but what if we had the Twitter that says, my victory is I put my name in for the lottery for the dorms, and then I thought I was going to be stuck with this room full of radon because I learned later that it had radon in it, and my victory is this crazy chick right ahead of me in line. She got the room, and I didn't have to get it.
Yeah, that's what you call a close call. You just got to wipe your brow and go, woo!
Or is that victories? Does this suggest that victories are dependent on your perspective? Depending on your goal, right? Whether you've succeeded or failed. Your victory is dependent on what you are trying to do, and different people try to do different things.
Absolutely. This weekend, I finally cut myself the right way. I did it! Huzzah! Right? It's a little victory, a little celebration.
All right, we have another call.
So, anywho, I just wanted to say you guys are doing a great show. It's only your second episode, but I can already tell you're going to go the distance.
We're going to go the distance, Chris.
I like that.
This is our victory. Good.
That's a little victory for us.
We didn't expect that.
That is pretty sweet.
All right, so we have more clarification from Hug Party.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I worked for a lawyer, just one lawyer, not a big firm, and it was a clerical error. She found out when I told her. So, and then she goes on to say, I Hug Party, I'm going to pretend you're a girl, so I hope you're a girl. She says the lawyer said to keep it as a thank you. Hug Party was temping while her friend was studying abroad. So it was a clerical error and keep it. So the question is this lawyer, this came out of the lawyer's pocket. If she says it was not a firm, and it's probably some kind of payroll service or something, who knows, but this is a lawyer. She's probably paying Hug Party, you know, $8.50 an hour to do, you know,
backbreaking
research,
legal right. maneuvers.
So it's sort Apparently of a it, it, it's a preemptive out of court settlement against you know against wrongful termination.
That's how they had to file it.
And then Hug Party goes on to say the paralegal said she wouldn't have said anything. So Hug Party's coworker says, "Oh, she would just kept it if it had been her."
Oh, we'll see. Now I think it's a real victory because it's like you are rewarded for your truthfulness.
Right.
Right?
Right. This is absolutely a victory free and clear, in my opinion, because had a Hug Party been asked to return the money, I'm sure she would have because she volunteered the information. And so the response was, you know, it's fine. So this is absolutely a morally clear victory with no doubt. This is a
solid one.
Yeah, this is one that has no moral downside because the person who was quote unquote wronged said it's fine. They're not pressing charges. They're not pressing moral charges such as it is.
Is it wrong that I can't find any in my own life like that for the purposes of our discussion? I can't find any victories that was like I was rewarded for a good thing that I did that nobody saw. That didn't happen. I only made out when there was an error in my favor and I left.
I'm having a hard time thinking of that too. I do remember when I was in the sixth grade.
I have no good things in my life is what it is.
Well, what about the time when... Oh, wait, no, that didn't happen to you. That happened to me. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But well, you look similar, so you saw it.
Yeah, I was unsure if it happened. I think it was the mirror, but I thought you were in the room.
You're like, am I Chris? Is he having a victory? No. I feel good.
Yeah, because that would. I remember being confused at the time because I didn't think you were very, just in general, very victorious. So.
You're right. You're like, he's going to feel so good when. No, that's me. He's probably still having a real crappy time somewhere.
So if you have none of these morally clear victories in your life, do you have any of those morally ambiguous victories where you were victorious at someone else's expense?
Let me think. No, I feel like my victories are like, not allowed to leave work until 5, left at 4:40. Nobody saw.
But are you a salary or hourly?
I don't know. What's the one where it counts? what's the one that it matters that you didn't stay 8 hours?
Well, hold on. If you're salary, then you get paid the same no matter how much you work.
Okay, I wasn't salary.
Okay, you're hourly. You get paid every hour that you were there.
What's the one where I'm taking money from the company?
Well, that's what I mean. It depends on whether or not you said you were there till 5 or you didn't say you were there till 5.
What's the one where my actions just really caused a problem for somebody in payroll? And they could not figure out the source, and they probably lost their job. And now part of that was because they're not very good at payroll. So it's not all me.
Okay.
Right?
So this is a situation where you're like, well, they deserved me stealing from them. If only they hadn't left the gumballs out in a big bowl, I wouldn't have taken 30 of them, even though I only dropped a dime and a paperclip into the slot.
And you know how long you can use a paperclip? You can use it over and over again. You know how many papers that's good for? You keep that. You hang on to that. That's good for the rest of your life.
As long as you drop something in there, then...
You give a man a fish. Am I right?
Put a paperclip on a string. He'll eat gumballs for life.
Yeah. I would say well, that's not fair. It's his fault that he's got a machine that can't differentiate between a, you know...
Well, I'm thinking of the March of Dimes cardboard thing where it's like, it's just a bag of like a whole box with an opening full of candy, and you're supposed to put something in the slot, and it's like, well, suggested 25 cents. Is this on the honor system? So you put a paperclip in. At least you're putting something in the slot.
Yeah, March of Dimes. I got a victory. Those dimes marched right in my pocket.
Look, how much would they spend to buy a paperclip for the office? At least a quarter, right? Paperclips are like a quarter apiece.
I don't think so. Where are you getting them?
There's a guy comes by with a bag. I buy them from him. Wait, how do you get them?
He's a small businessman. It's like good to support the town economy.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know where the paper clips that you buy, where they're made. Mine are made right here in town. He has a wire bending machine.
I get mine overseas. It's child labor.
You have Laotian paper clips.
Yeah.
No, it's, mine. They're beautiful, though. There's this guy named Leon. He comes around and they're handcrafted paper clips. I think he extrudes wire from old aluminum cans. He has an extruder, so it looks like a spinning wheel. And then he puts it in a vise and then he bends it around. He used to bend it around a mold, but now he just does it by hand. The guy's 84 years old.
What?
And he bends his own paper clips. They cost 25 cents a piece.
What is this human interest incredible story that you're telling?
I'm just talking about, I like supporting local business. I like encouraging handcrafts.
You're helping this old man buy medicine, and I like got a intern fired.
I think there should be a whole farmer's market for office supply products.
This hand-pressed paper, it's near letter-sized. It's close, and it's a much better quality.
It's got that ragged edge. It's like handmade paper. Does not fit in your printer, however.
Right. It's
unless
like
you
cut
have
to
our,
fit.
Unless you have our handmade printer, and you point over, and it's just a guy with an ink pad.
He comes to your house. Tell me what it needs to say.
Sampling on Twitter,
inks.
Daniel Sitt says, bank error in your favor. Collect $200.
I don't know what we can learn from what Monopoly is trying to teach us about that.
Monopoly, you know, Monopoly was actually created as a tool to teach against the hoarding of money.
But the goal was to get the most money.
Right, but don't you realize that every time you play Monopoly, you end up angry and shouting at everybody?
What if that just taught people to be angry?
Well, the goal is to make the hoarding of money a disagreeable experience.
Look, I mean, that makes sense to me. I get where they're going, but they made that game way too fun and colorful to make that hit home. You got a fun little man. You got colorful paper money that you like to count and hold and look
at. You're supposed to be repulsed by his mustache.
Yeah, the game should have just been this gray, I know. Sad.
It should have had a lot more browns, Baltic Avenue, and should have had a lot more mold.
Yeah, it just should have looked like the game board came out of Silent Hill. It should just have been a miserable... It's a punishment for kids. It's not a game.
You're going to play Monopoly. No!
You're not sharing your toys? We're playing Monopoly tonight.
Oh, no, Daddy, please, anything with that.
You know what? Your mother hates playing Monopoly. You know she's tired after work, but now we got to play it because that's what you did.
This is an abusive relationship, Charles.
You shut up and you spin.
Charles, I want to go to counseling.
We are playing Monopoly. You are monopolizing my emotions.
I think Boardwalk and Park Place should have that really offensive guilt, like G-I-L-T. Like
guilt,
with
gold.
Well, like if you've ever been to Orange County and you've seen like the headquarters of the Trinity Broadcasting Corporation, the religious TV station, it's all
ridiculous.
It's so ostentatious.
Yeah, I think God loves it though.
I think it should be like that, where it's like look how fancy it is. Is this what you wanted? All of this luxury? It's like, no, I don't want to bathe in liquid gold. I don't.
Yeah, you go in like the bed, the mattress is made of pure gold.
Isn't that what
it's
you
the softest,
want?
Precious metal? So that's gonna work out for you.
We'll hammer it bed. To fit your body. Why would you ever want to get up? Your sheets are made of platinum.
No. And then 2 weeks later, it's like, that's not so bad.
Yeah, it's like the Midas Touch thing. He's like, you know what? Actually, at least I know what to expect.
Yeah, this is a devil I know at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The cool thing is, King Midas, once he got used to eating gold, he didn't have to worry about, like, oh, my banana's spoiled. It's just, all right, pick up a rock.
Why wouldn't...
It's all the same.
Let me ask you something. Now we're really going off topic.
No, this is the topic.
That's fine. When King Midas, I mean, was it any part of his body? If you gave him a kiss, he'd turn into gold? Because that sucks. But if it's just his hands, he could just wear golden gloves, if you will.
I think it's probably any part of his body. I think that's what makes it... At least I'm sure there's different retellings of the story, but that's what makes it a curse, is that he can't touch anything with any part of his body. Otherwise, he'd just be like one of those monkeys that learns to paint with his feet.
Yeah,
he would just do that. You know.
Well, okay, is his curse like context sensitive? Because he could go outside and touch the earth, and then everything just becomes gold.
I don't buy the earth thing, because the earth is not an object. The earth is made of like stones and rocks and like.
Well, then But then if that's true, then he'd only turn like your outermost layer of skin into gold. And then it'd be painful, but you wouldn't die.
Well, your outermost layer of skin is still you. You
take that gold. Yeah, but it sells, dude. If he walks barefoot in the garden and he's only turning a little bit of that dirt that's just under his feet into gold, then if he grabs my arm, then I am losing a little skin, but I'm getting a gold bracelet. And that is a good... I thank you, King Midas, a generous king.
I think that only works up to the point at which he oversaturates the gold market and gold loses its value.
The town is just... The economy is just a wreck. They can't export it.
Right, exactly. Everyone's like, more gold? No.
I got gold brooms.
Hey, you know what becomes really valuable?
No.
Silver.
Oh, yeah.
Becomes more rare than gold all of a sudden.
That's true.
It just moves up the ladder. It's like, finally, like, knocked off gold off the top of the list. Silver is coming up, baby. Make way.
He's in bed with those guys.
Here comes silver.
I got the curse on purpose so I could help out my friends, the silver lobbyists.
They're like, hey, Midas, why don't you get the gold curse? And then we'll give you the antidote. I know a guy who knows the antidote.
Okay, which gypsy do I need to piss off? I don't remember.
Not the one on the left. That's the ruby gypsy. We don't got no cure for rubies. Don't be silly. There's no cure for rubies. I mean, don't be an idiot.
He's like, it's late at night. He goes up to the old crone. Excuse me. And she goes, rubies. And he goes, oh, nope. Okay. All right. Go over here.
I'm looking for gold.
Oh, yeah. Just down on the corner. Take a left and then into the hovel.
Good stuff. Here's a tweet from T Paradox, which I thought was interesting. I think you're thinking of a Philip K. Dick stories back on Monopoly, where a Monopoly knockoff teaches kids to give all their money to Mars. What? That's not a story. From Dick, I could imagine it.
I like where you're unilaterally denying that it exists. No, you're wrong. Mistaken. Doesn't happen.
That's not it. No. That must be a joke I don't get.
I think here's the thing about Philip K. Dick stories. There are 48,000 really obscure Philip K. Dick stories.
Oh.
It's like, you remember the Philip K. Dick story where everybody walked around wearing a giant ostrich head and it turns out they were all in a warehouse underneath the ocean?
And we didn't learn anything, but I had to take it apart for English class. I had to diagram sentences.
It was sort of it was more of a premise than a story, and it was in a short story collection, and it ended before anything could happen. But I do remember everyone was miserable.
I do remember it was not Philip K. Dick, but a guy on the subway was telling me this, and I left before he stopped talking, but he was urinating the entire time.
So I assume it must have been really good.
Clearly, to give him that much pleasure, that he should lose control of his bladder. It's a great story. It's the mark of a good story. Well,
I think that's probably that is the mark, right? It's what's it called? What's the term where it's like the story was good, but it was only a half pisser.
It was a pisser, yeah. Why would you do that? And does half pisser mean you just piss down one pant leg? Just one leg.
Or only half as much or half as intense? Because that sort of thing, you know, it's like you're either pissing or you're not. And it's just a matter of volume and power. Right. And frequency.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but once I get going, there's that's going to full stream at some point. I mean, that's not going to just trickle out. I don't care how long the book is.
Let's change the subject. Random tech guy on Twitter says, the IRS is holding on to my 2008 refund because they claim I didn't file in 2006. They are making me refile. This sounds bad so far.
Yeah.
He says, I got a $700 refund in 2006. And now they want me to refile, and they want to give me the refund again.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
That is good. That's good if you don't get in trouble. Because I have a friend who had a similar circumstance where they were paying their, what do they call it when you pay the taxes quarterly? Is it just quarterly taxes?
Estimated taxes.
Yeah, there you go. And she paid her estimated taxes. They filed with an accountant. The IRS gave them double back the refund that they thought, and they figured out that it was because they forgot to take into account that they were paying estimated taxes all year, and they ended up arguing with a woman from the IRS, and who was saying, no, that is your money, you keep that money. And she was getting belligerent, and they were like, no, this is not our money, and we don't want to get in trouble in 5 months when you figure out the error. And she was like, she had an attitude like, we are the IRS, we don't have problems like this. And so it took her a couple of days and a couple of phone calls, and she said that mid call the woman figured it out, and she was getting very angry and very frustrated with her. And then the woman's like, hold on a second. And she goes away for 10 minutes. And then she comes back and says, let's find out how to take care of this. I am sorry for the difficulty. But then she was like, this money is not yours and you cannot keep it. And she was like, what do you... I wasn't going to keep it.
Yeah, that's the thing with the IRS is you always have to figure that they're going to figure it out, you know, like you said, 8 months from now. You know?
Yeah, and then you're going to be, you know...
Then you have to pay penalties.
At least I got that $3,000.
Right.
They're going to take it. There's a tweet here that I thought was pure as well. Look at this one. Lyman Alpha says, here's his victory. When I got my $350 symbol for my drum set signed by Mike Portnoy of Dream Theater. clearly a dream of his to get that signed.
I guess so. I kind of would want a little more background from this. Like, why is this so unanticipated? Obviously, I realize this is an unusual circumstance, but he doesn't say.
That's true.
Did he go to a concert with the symbol in his hand, or did it show up in the mailbox? Or I'd like to know a little more background on that line.
Portnoy's my uncle.
Excuse me, Mr. Portnoy. I have a complaint.
Yeah, what is it?
My complaint is that you did not laugh at the pun on your name.
Oh my god! What do you want from me? I'm in Dream Theater.
I don't know what that is.
I think they sing songs about like Valkyries and stuff.
Oh.
I think it's like super orchestral rock.
Is it like Rush, where it's all nerd stuff?
I think it's a little nerd stuff. Yeah.
Oh, he does say later or earlier, he has it less precisely put. He says, the time I was able to get a top-of-the-line cymbal for my drum set while having it autographed by one of my favorite drummers. So he says,
Was he selling them?
I was able to get. So I still want to know the background on how this worked.
That actually seems broader. It seems like now I'm seeing this guy with a van full of cymbals.
Well, he said he was able to get a top-of-the-line cymbal, and he was able to get it signed. So it seems like it was tough for him to get the cymbal to begin with.
Maybe you... tough because expensive or tough because rare? Expensive because rare, maybe. I don't know.
Well, he said it was a top-of-the-line cymbal, so he was able... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about drums.
Look at this.
Cymbals are the thing that you hit with your foot, right?
No, it's the friggin'... It's the metal thing.
Oh, the metal thing. It's the metal, the stick.
Looks like a sideways gong.
To hit the metal one is the stick, right?
What? What stick?
The stick you use to hit the round ones.
No, that's just, you just use a thing. Any stick can hit that cymbal.
I thought there was a word for that like drum stick.
No, I think you can hit this, drum stick.
What? No.
If you're playing drums, you don't have to switch sticks to hit the cymbal, and then you got to go back to your old sticks.
Well, what kind of stick do you use to hit the other drums?
You hit just a drum stick, right? Just made out of wood, natural and pure from the earth.
Drum stick.
Yeah.
It seems like there'd be a lot more creative name for that.
You know what? I don't like the way that it's been co-opted.
What's the one that has the, you mean for the chicken lobby?
Chicken, the ice cream, friggin' ice cream, that's the worst one. Chicken drumstick, okay, it's so antiquated, I can believe it. That thing, that ice cream cone has no business being called a drumstick.
So antiquated, you're like, well, hold on, they were stupid 100 years ago. So
yeah,
well,
Grandpa likes it, so we'll call it a drumstick for him. It's a leg, it's a chicken leg. And it flares at the end with meat, I'm sorry, it doesn't look like a stick.
Are drumsticks flared?
No.
So why is the chicken like a drumstick?
I don't know. I mean, even when you take all the meat off and it's just a bone, I think that's a bone. I don't think you call that a drumstick.
Wait, do you call it a bone stick?
No. You don't even call it a drum bone, which makes a lot more sense. It would kind of unify this whole thing.
What about a bone stick?
That's kind of cool, though.
Or is that...
Bone stick sounds like a brand of t-shirts from the early 80s.
Or is that a verb? Hey, check out, I'm going to bone sticker.
Oh, yeah? I don't know who his friend is that would go, oh, yeah. That's his math teacher.
You can hit other, you don't have to have drum sticks to hit drums with. You can use like, there is a metal one, right? What's one that looks like a brush?
I think it's just a brush.
No, are you kidding? Are you telling me drummers are this retarded? They don't have special names for everything.
Yeah, I think that they basically think it's like whatever shape it is, they just go for it.
What's the name of that?
You're lucky the drum is not called a circle. It's got its own word.
it looks like an oil drum, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess it does. It looks like something you could put things in, like a drum, a round drum. Oh, my God, you're right. Drumming is awful. That cymbal's worthless now. You get it signed by a drummer? It's like damaged it. I have a story about getting signatures. Scott and I wrote that animated series, you know, and one of the voice actors was a cool guy and a collector of various things. And for whatever reason, he knew that I liked ELO and I liked Jeff Lynne. And so at the end of the thing, he says, "Did you get my? I got you a present. Did you get it?" And for the longest time, I couldn't get it. It was held up at the UPS or whatever. Finally, get it, and he had bought me a copy of I think it was El Dorado, an LP that was signed by Jeff Lynne, which is something that I've been trying to find my entire life to get that, and I'm always getting outbid on eBay. And I don't care what the rules say; there are snipers. That is real. It's not mediated. It's cutthroat. I hate eBay. Anyway, I have read so much about forged signatures by him that I can't enjoy it. I just assume that it is fake. It might very well be real. It might be great.
So this is an unanticipated failure.
Yeah, this is an unanticipated... This is like I had victory in my hands, and then my own folly ruined it. And had its own victory.
Well, Lyman Alpha offers a clarification. He says it was a George's Music in Orange Park, Florida, in I did not expect either. Portnoy in Florida, I also heard Mike's very pompous too. So I don't understand still. Is this a signed thing that was at the store signed and you bought it? Or you bought it and then he was there and he signed it?
No, I'm expecting that because... I mean, if it was signed, I don't think he wouldn't have said Portnoy in Florida, because Mike Portnoy does not like Florida.
Oh, is that?
Oh,
is that
also,
a known
thing? I think it's because Dream Theater, aren't they like friggin' Norwegian? Like they're not American band. They're like from Sweden. So maybe that was a rare thing to see him at a store in Florida.
Okay, so we're working under the assumption that he was at the store and he signed it there. And he bought the symbol and then had him sign it. So if this is incorrect, Lyman Alpha, give us a clarification.
That anyone sounds else like that a victory to me.
Anyone else that wants to weigh in, of course, you can tweet using hashtag TMH2. We have some more tweets. Jinxville says, they called chicken legs drumsticks because there was a shortage of actual wood drumsticks in the Depression. Are you telling me that they use chicken bones in the Depression?
To drum or to build with?
Maybe to build with.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
because they had to confiscate all the wooden drumsticks and use them as building materials.
See, exactly. I was going to say, here we have a tweet that, because of its length, is kind of ambiguous. Because did they have a shortage of wood drumsticks because they were using them in buildings?
Right, they're using them to hold up windows.
So now they had to build like homes out of bones.
Right,
which you don't see in any of those old comedies because it's pretty dark.
Well, you know, all those 20s and 30s, you know, really lavish musical numbers, they were to distract people from the crippling poverty all around them,
from so having to live near bones.
Right, they didn't address the bone cabins phenomenon.
That's why the only buildings in America made out of wood were the theaters. It's like, get away from those bones for a while, for an afternoon. Stop thinking about that. You're living inside of a dead thing.
Right. It's bones, and they're sealed up with congealed chicken fat.
Yeah. And then the sun, your house would just melt. And the flies were ridiculous.
And then every night, it's like, well, we've finished our home. We can go back to sleep in our bones. And then in the morning, it's like you have to get up before your house melts around you. And then the rest of the day, well, it's back to work rebuilding our home. At least labor is keeping us honest.
Right. That's why they had to get up early anyway to look for work or to be depressed, to create the depression.
Right. I you know what? That's probably a good point. We would have fewer depressions if we just raised the price of depression so people couldn't afford it.
Yeah. Kind of reverse that effect.
Because here's the problem. It's too much free depression running around, so there's a glut on the market. That's what causes depressions, is when there's too much depression, it's too easy to be depressed. Then it's like, all right, well, now everyone's depressed, and then you have a depression. So, but what if you were able to raise the price of depression, or make it more rare in some way, like maybe just restrict access to antidepressant medications? Then, and you give everyone good honest labor, like building bone houses every day, and then no one can be depressed. They don't have time to be depressed.
That's why the WPA was formed. I mean, that's why they enacted that, so that you could just build some bones. Like, there are still bones in our highways. If you know, that's a big part of our infrastructure. Nobody talks about it.
Lyman Alpha weighs in with a clarification. He says he was there and I got it signed. So this is, we understand now how it's working. DT is American and they play prog metal. Portnoy is one of the biggest and best drummers ever. So biggest, I don't know, how big is this guy? 300, 400 pounds?
He could have been really big.
Or maybe it was like a surprise. 7'6" kind of thing.
Could have been a surprise to see him at George's Music, because that's like a Hobbit music store.
Right, because George...
It's got a low door.
George is a well-known Hobbit. It's got George, one of those circular doorways with a knob in the center.
Built in the hill. Knob in the center, which is not the best mechanical advantage.
Yeah, I'm
not
sure
what the advantage
of that is.
You need that advantage.
Well, I mean, we have to assume that the knob works like a regular knob where it turns a latch that goes into the door frame. But what if there's a different? What if it's a sort of a radial latch where when the door is closed, it actually sends, bolts, or it just widens the door frame so it sticks in the jam, and you turn it and it contracts the edge a little bit so that it can open.
That sounds like such a hassle.
Yeah, but they're hobbits. You know, they got to fill their time.
That is friggin' impossible. Why don't they just put the knob near the hinges? And then you really got to push it.
Because this way, you can open it either direction. You just have to remember to put it back when you're done. It's one of those, like saloon doors kind of thing, where everything is... You can go one way, but it has another hinge that's offset from it. So the hinges only go one way, but there are multiple hinges at offsets, so it really goes any direction.
That's a good sight gag.
Also,
a cowboy's going up to a saloon, and he's like, "Sorry, we're closed for the night," and he's got a padlock on the saloon doors.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say
because you could still crawl under and steal the alcohol.
I thought you were going to say there's a pull sign on there, and he's pushing on it.
and the guy behind him is like, "You idiot."
Yeah, the guy's just on the other side, and he just sort of like, he just pushes it toward the guy, so it, oh, okay, I get it, and it's a pull. There's a, when I was a kid working at my parents' shop, we had doors like that where they were push doors, but people would try and pull them, and they wouldn't open. Yeah. And so they'd put their hand up to the glass and look inside like, is it open? It's 2:14 in the afternoon. And then sometimes they would see that there's another door around the side of the building, so they would leave the totally unlocked door and walk around the side of the building, which was a pull door, and then they'd come in that way. All right, now I got it figured out, was sort of their expression.
I can only pull. Right, I got two handicaps. I only can pull, and I only can turn left in a car. it takes me longer, but...
Because only the one turn signal works.
Yeah, and I'm a good citizen.
I do like remembering that sometimes after the store was locked up, my parents would still let customers come around the back if they had a question. And so what they would do is they would gesture to the person on the other, they'd see them through the window and they'd gesture, "Come around the back." And I didn't realize that that was a discretionary move. Like, we're closed. We're not going to invite everybody. But this guy, he looks like he's just rushing up. He just missed us by a few minutes. We never leave right on time anyway. And so when I was a kid, I would see people running up to the door they'd come up to the door and it would be locked. And then they'd look in and they'd see me as a little kid just pointing like mad to the side. And then I would like run around to the side of the building and then point further back to the other door, like the door in the very back of the building. And then like they'd be like, "Oh, where is this child leading me? To die?" And then at the back, it's
to a
like,
mystery. I like this.
I'd run back there and I would open the door, and it's like I would be running to make sure that they, would be there by the time they arrived. And then I would open the door, and there they'd be. And then it was like, well, that's all I can do. I'm just a kid. I'm not going to help them.
Change for 50?
I'm not going to, like, find what they need. I'm not going to, you know, help them as a shopkeeper.
That's going to be very rewarding as a child, though, to know that you helped.
I did it. He came back because I did it.
Yeah. And then he just robs the place.
He's like, thank you very much. Give me all your money.
Yeah, the whole time you're forgetting the part where he's got a mask on and a gun in his hand. And you're like, around the back. Come on. Oh, what's okay. with this guy?
Hey, I'm he's got the giant sack with the dollar bill on it. There, the dollar sign on it. He's like,
very literally,
excuse me, my bag is empty. Can you help me out? Can you? This bag is supposed to be full. I came because I was hoping we could get the. It's like a car repair thing where it's like, hey, excuse me, so my bag is empty.
I'm having a problem with my robbery. It's not working out for me. It's not. There's no money inside of here that's not mine.
Can you give me an estimate? What would it take to make my robbery work again?
I think all of the money in our register.
All right, so we have Edgy Swordbearer on the Twitter saying, if drums were circles, how would you distinguish them from cymbals? Not all cymbals look like hats. Well, it's very simple. The drum is a circle. The cymbal is a disc.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, exactly.
The stick, I've already determined the stick is a stick. The brush is a brush. The pen, the drum pen is a pen. Is there a drum? He said there's drum hats, right? So some are hats, drum hats, drum paper.
Drum hats.
Is there drum paper? That's what goes on top.
Yeah, some of them are really thin, and you look like you could write on them.
Right. So that's drum paper. We got drumsticks, drum pens, drum hats, drum ties. Is there drum ties that you can wear around your neck, like a mobile drum?
I like that idea. That's good.
What about those? What about those Karate Kid 2 drums? How do those fit into it?
I don't know, but you can carry those with you.
You can hang that from your neck. That's a drum tie, right?
I have a great distinguisher for Edgy Swordbearer. He's saying, if drums were circles, how would you distinguish them from cymbals? Well, obviously, it's a case of the guy doing the drumming. I mean, the drummers are the ones who made up the names. And when you're sitting in a drum kit, you look down, you see the drums, circles. They're circles. You look up at the cymbals, you don't see the circle. You see the side of it. It looks like a hat.
That's true.
Right? If you look from a top, you would say circles. It's circles everywhere. I don't know which one to hit first.
It's a frame of reference.
That's why they sat down. That's frame why they started sitting down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what about the one that you kick? What's that one?
I think it's foot drumming.
Foot drum.
Foot circle, probably. Probably
a foot circle. What about the one that kind of sounds metal-y? It's got those wires under it?
It's a metal helper.
Metal helper, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's that way if you need sort of a metal thing, then that helps you.
It's not really a primary part of the kit. You don't really play that. You play that when you want to add a little zest. It's help the song out.
It's like spice. Drum spice.
Yeah. It's a little spice.
All right. Okay, so we got drum paper. We talked about that. We talked about drum ties, drum belt. Is there anything that you can wear around any sort of drum? Like, I don't know much about music, but is there a sort of drum you can kind of keep
your pants
up? There's
a whole continuum of clothing probably that helps drummers, like a lifting belt, you know, that you wear it when you work in a warehouse.
I wonder at what point did drum suspenders give away to drum belt?
I don't know. But at some point, it went out of fashion.
Right.
There's only so much you can do with a suspender.
Right. Because here's the thing. Suspenders, I mean, a drum suspender, you want two things. You want A, keep your pants up. B, create a jazzy sound. And the thing about drum belts is they keep your pants up, sure, but they do it in a, like, the physics of it are different. It's a cinching motion, not a holding tight lifting
motion.
Right,
it's not a gravity. Yeah,
and
exactly.
So you have to re-engineer the drum part of it itself because the physics of it are different. You can't get the same sound from it.
It's probably why you don't see them that much.
Right.
Or pants, for that matter.
Oh, there are no drum hats. Lyman Alpha says, hi-hats are another type of cymbal. Drums are cylinders. Says something called a snare drum. I don't think that's right. Snare drum sounds like
a trap.
That's a trap. It's like for bears. If you're drumming in the woods, you need a snare drum to keep your campsite safe.
This makes a lot of... You know what? I got to hand it to drummers. We started out this conversation thinking that they're kind of dumb.
Yeah, I certainly had no...
But they've got a lot of bases covered.
Is that a drum term? Or is that just... Oh, that's a baseball term.
I'm mixing my metaphor. What I should have said is they have all their drums beat.
Circled, right.
Sounds.
Drum. Right. Is that where we get the term drum circled? Well, you certainly have all your drums circled, and then everyone gets together, all the people that have no jobs because they've got all their drums circled, and then they just play music.
I want to say that's why. That actually was a big thing in a neighborhood that I used to live in Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of a hippie neighborhood.
And so, because hippies... Oh, this makes a lot of sense now, because hippies are the ones that feel like they have everything solved, right?
And they don't have any jobs.
Right. And so
now we're starting to see the whole depression bones thing roll in.
Right, exactly. So they hang around. Everyone that has all their drums circled gets together with their chicken bones because they don't need them for their house because they have already...
they're vegan.
Yes. That's the missing piece of the puzzle.
And finally, Edgy Sword Bearer says, would a washboard be suspenders or a shirt? Well, it's for washing your clothes, so it doesn't matter. It's not really germane to the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen, well, you have a distinction between drummers and percussionists, right? Drummers don't like to be called percussionists in the same way that pilots don't like to be called airplane drivers.
Okay.
Or is it the other way around?
I don't know. I think drummer is cool, though.
Drummer sounds like an awesome word. Percussionist sounds like you're in seventh grade band.
Yeah, it sounds like you're a dork.
You have to wear white sneakers and you have to wear the band jacket.
Yeah. You don't want to be a percussionist.
Okay, so percussion is the act of hitting something. So is a boxer technically a percussionist? That's why a drummer doesn't want to be lumped in. I get it. It's a square rectangle kind of thing. A square is a rectangle. But
so they
not
call it
all
the sweet science.
Not all rectangles are squares.
Yeah.
I get it. So a drummer is a percussionist, but a percussionist could also be, a boxer or a construction worker? They hit stuff with hammers, right?
I accidentally percuss things during the day too, so technically
we're all percussionists at different times in our lives.
Yeah.
What about, can you be a metaphorical percussionist? Can you really hit something? Yeah, I really hit that one.
Like hit a high note, hit a home run.
Yeah, baseball players are percussionists. Good baseball players are percussionists. Bad baseball players are by definition not like if you are not a percussionist, you are also not a good baseball player. The better percussionist you are, the better baseball player you are, unless you're a pitcher in the American League, in which case it doesn't matter.
Blackjack dealers, percussionists, because you have them hit you.
Yeah, they're hitting people all day long.
Yeah, they're really good at it, too, and they get paid high.
Hey, and blackjack dealers on a riverboat, you'll see them wear a straw hat. Maybe this is where we get the term hi-hat.
I thought you were going to say, and... blackjacks, you hit people with them to take their money.
What is that thing? I've heard this in Hardy Boys books my whole life. What is a blackjack?
All I know is that it looks like a beaver's tail, and I think it's a little sack filled with ball bearings.
Well, that's what I didn't know, is if it was something flexible or if it was something rigid, like a shoehorn.
No,
it always looks like
a
shoehorn
baggy.
In a picture.
It does look like a shoehorn, but I think it's a little baggy full of metal balls. Which seems like not the most stealthy weapon. You're walking around rattling around with
Ringle,
these balls.
Rattle, rattle, rattle. Oh, no, it's just change in me pocket. Pay no mind.
It's just my tiny spherical keys that I don't hit people with.
I wonder if in Canada that sort of weapon is more effective because everyone's carrying change in their pockets anyway.
Just because of the metal, all the metal money?
Yeah, because in Canada, single and $2 currency is only coins. There's no bills till you get to $5. And so people have little coin purses. People carry coins in their pockets all the time. And so it's more common to hear metal jingling around. So a ball bearing filled blackjack is not going to be as conspicuous. I wonder if America doesn't want to go on the coin dollar standard. Because when Canada did it, they just cut off the bill. They said, all right, everything's coins from now on. America's been trying to introduce these coins gradually, but maybe it's for our safety. They don't want to do, they want to do coins for because of international pressure, but and also because of the mint lobby. But I really think that if we had more coins, with a country as big as America, if everyone had coins gently in their pockets, you'd see a rise in blackjack attacks.
Yeah, and I, not only that, but you know, if you were a blackjacker, and you got on a roll, there's no limit. I mean, you basically, the way we are now, we got so few coins, you start from zero, you're not going to blackjack anybody.
Right.
But imagine you've already accumulated like four pouches worth of these coins. You're gonna do a easier blackjack the next time. It's just going to get easier.
It's sort of like when you're playing a video game and you get better and better weapons. In the only way that the game keeps it fair is you have to fight harder and harder monsters. But in real life, a human being is a human being. A blackjack to the skull is basically a blackjack to the skull.
Yeah.
And so what happens is you have this great imbalance of power between blackjackers and their victims.
It's this not. But you know what? It comes back around, though, because once the blackjack gets too big, because you're so rich with coins, now you really got to have the arm strength to nail those guys.
And they get stronger and stronger.
And you get, and then you're working out. And then you're like a buff, you're like a huge, healthy, wealthy man.
Hold on a second. Mr. Bildango is saying a blackjack is a little hard, flexible rubber thingy that you whack someone on the head with. Hard, flexible rubber. That doesn't seem, that seems more like a, maybe Mr. Bildango has, I think he's only been exposed to, I think Mr. Bildango has only been exposed to training blackjacks.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and then when you graduate to the the full on metal ones, then you know. But I think he must have only gotten to level one or level two or something because he's only got the rubber ones. He's only had experience with those. I will forgive that.
That's okay.
Because
play a little longer, you'll get it.
And you know why it's all right that he hasn't had experience with the real thing? Because we live in America, a land that has outlawed coin money and thus the incidence of blackjack attacks. I wonder how many other things the government has saved us for without even, without, no one gives them any credit. Unless there's, unless there's a giant rash of, you know, some problem. And it won't be blackjack attacks because we have that solved because of the money thing. You know, it's like every time there's a 9/11, it's like, well, the government didn't save us. But how many other things have they saved us from?
Well, my head's not bashed in, so thanks, America. What do you say? Tweet me harder.
I know what I say.
What?
All right. I think that's the end of the show.
God, that bell is on some kind of a delay.
Yeah, well, anyway, we're working out the deal. We have two different people, Crazy C Studios and Edgy Swordbearer, are talking about blackjack, winning blackjack in a casino as an example of an unanticipated victory. I disagree slightly because I believe that if you go into something gambling, you may kind of hope you'll win, but rarely do you expect to lose. You feel like, you know what, it would be really nice if I won. Even if you kind of know you're going to lose.
If you expected to win, or if you expected to lose, then you wouldn't play. I wouldn't even go in.
Right. There are people that say, oh, I'll just blow this $20 or whatever. They kind of figure they're going to lose, but they're not actually expecting to lose. In which case, if they were, they would just throw the money in the trash. Because it's better in the trash than going to further the casino, you know what I mean?
Well, there's so much other stuff to do in Vegas besides sit in front of a machine or a guy you don't know, right? Or
wearing
is there
some
not?
Kind of hat, right?
Yeah, probably with a hat on. But I mean, whenever I've gone to Vegas, I don't want to gamble. I figure that money's gone.
Yeah, although I will say I went to Vegas recently with my friend Todd. We were driving home from Utah. We stopped in Vegas just to have some dinner at a buffet. And it was like, I was like, all right, I'm just going to gamble, you know, like once. Like I played $1 in a slot machine. I put like one bill on a roulette thing. And I sort of have a tradition of that almost. I haven't only done it a few times, but with roulette especially, it's like you play one spin on, you put it red or black, and then win or lose, you walk away. So you've either doubled your money or lost it, and either way, you are done.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of a fun thing to do. And I won. And then I did a slot machine thing, and I came out of it a couple dollars ahead. And Todd was like, I'm going to do it too. And Todd lost every time. So I walked out of there, like, total, after doing this several times on different games, I walked out of there, like, $38 ahead, and Todd was, like, down $16. Which is unusual, certainly. And that may be some unanticipated victory, but it was foreshadowed when we were at a gas station in Vegas on the way up on our trip. That was like, I don't know, 2 a.m. or something. And in Nevada, of course, they have slot machines everywhere, in gas stations and truck stops. And I put some coins in, and it was that same sort of thing. I'm going to play one round and then walk away. And I won like a dollar. And so we had to try and get the attendant. It was one of these things where there's several machines in a truck stop, and you have to get a ticket and give it to the attendant to get your cash. And this attendant did not like being disturbed at 2 a.m. for this guy to give him his $1.
It's his friggin' job.
I know. That's what we were arguing. It's your job. What else are you going to do? But
if you play favorites like that, you don't want to get up and get a dollar. The whole system falls apart.
Exactly. And I think it goes the same way with gumballs or with $5,000 refunds. If you have a standard, you have to stick to it. Otherwise, your morality it means nothing. It's dependent on your whim.
You know what? Nah, I get it. This show was to prove that point to me. I'm sorry I ever took the opposite side, because I think you're right.
It's a metaphor.
Every gumball counts.
Every gumball counts. All right. Thank you very much for listening to Tweet Me Harder, the Internet's first, best, only, and last talkback-enabled interactive audio pod blast. I am David Malky.
And I'm Chris Straub.
We're very glad to have had you today, and we hope you will join us again next week. It's not going to be Wednesday next week. It's going to be Tuesday. It's
right.
Going to be Tuesday the 16th of June, same time, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. And it's going to be me, and it's going to be Chris.
It's going to be me. Chris. Follow us on Twitter. Our name is TweetHard. Or check us out at tweetmeharder.tumblr.com.
We have all the shows will be archived on tweetmeharder.tumblr.com. Our last week's show is up there now. This week's show will be up there shortly. Some people have asked about an iTunes feed, and I think we're going to have that starting up.
That's coming in
a couple shows. I don't want to put a feed up there that has one show on it. So it'll be there probably in a few weeks.
Yeah.
We should have a topic for next week's show, but you know what we're going to do is announce that later in the week so that people have a little more time to really absorb this one, and then just check out
a little
the
more time to have a week,
right?
Because nobody's done anything yet.
All right, guys, thank you very much for tuning in, and we will see you next Tuesday for the next episode of Tweet Me Harder.